Hey there, people, people, people. We got Muthonomics 2019 coming at you full steam. Hope everybody had a good Christmas, a good New Year. I'm sitting here recording and couldn't decide what to call this podcast because I have so many thoughts sort of backlogged in my head as it relates to overcoming poverty, succeeding in the marketplace of whether ideas or business. And you know, one of the pet peeves I have lately is, you know, I look around at the business consulting community, all of these talking heads, the Tony Robbins and the Marie Forleos and all these people that have made a living off of inspiring people to follow their dreams. And success looks the same across the board. It's the same Instagram filters, the same cool sunglass selfies, the same, you know, pictures with famous people, the same trim fit bodies, the same designer clothes, the same. Success looks the same across the board. And it's so, I think, unfair because there are billions with a B of people in poverty that will never look like a Tony Robbins. They'll never look like a Marie Forleo. They'll never, quote unquote, achieve their dreams if those dreams look like what all of these self-help gurus are displaying on their websites and their social media feeds. And so I'm really upset with that. It's really obnoxious to me. And I think I've always had an aversion to that styling of success. Going all the way back to, you know, my junior tennis days when I was playing tennis, you know, in worn out tennis shoes that my dad, you know, epoxied. He would cut off spare tires and epoxy them into the bottom of my sneakers so that I could get another match or two out of these shoes. You know, and tennis is a rich man's sport, and I just developed such a distaste for all of that upper crust, upper echelon stuff. Because they don't realize what a tremendous advantage they have by being born into, you know, a family that's already successful, or being born into a portion of the world or a neighborhood that's not, you know, ridden with crime and poverty and a lack of food. So I think that's the bone. That's the thing that's really been getting at me. And I don't really know what to title this podcast because I want to get at that particular group of people. And I want to let you know that it doesn't matter if you don't have, an upper hand. It doesn't matter if you are in the slums in America or the slums in the third world, or, you know, you currently, you know, you're living hand to mouth. You don't know where your next meal's coming from. You know, we take these business success things and it's just this fantasy land of, oh my goodness, I just want to fulfill my dreams. And my dreams are to, you know, get a bigger iPhone. Or right now I'm living a really comfortable life and my dreams are to find meaning. Well, there's a lot of people like I was when I was a kid that our dream was to eat our next meal. And these really fancy, polished business consultants and advisors, they don't realize this. They don't realize that there are billions of people that are concerned about getting their next meal. So I think this is where my focus for 2019 is sharpening. It's on, I want to teach people how to overcome poverty by doing a handful of really simple things. And it has nothing to do with achieving your dreams. It has nothing to do with Instagram filters. It has nothing to do with stupid marketing tactics. It has everything to do with grit, with understanding free market economics, the powers of laissez-faire. And it has a lot to do with mastering the internal doubts and demons and depression that impacts people in these less than ideal situations. So the first thing I want to talk about today, I think, is the power of poor. And I think this is probably what I'll call this particular episode, is knowing the power of poor and be afraid. Very, very afraid. Know the power of poor and be afraid. Be very afraid. And you go, well, what does that mean? I kind of know what, if you're poor right now, like let's say that you're working a minimum wage job, or, you know, you are, you know, a kid, a teenager, you know, and you have substance addicted parents like I may or may not have had. There's no effort. There's no, you know, they've sort of succumbed to whatever the environment is that has resulted from the poverty. Maybe you're laid off. Maybe you're on unemployment benefits. Maybe you don't know where your next job is coming from, and you're feeling very personally and very on a day-to-day basis, you're feeling the negative effects of being poor. And I've been there. I lived there until I was about 18. And it stinks. Like, you know, we talk about stuff, oh, the Eagles suck, or that movie was terrible, or yeah, I didn't really like that episode of that Netflix show that I watched. You know, those things aren't bad. I mean, you know, we talk, oh yeah, how was your dinner? It was okay. You know, the waiter was kind of rude, or, you know, wasn't quick enough, and we complain about it like it's the worst. No, there's real trouble in the world, and when you're in the midst of poverty, there is real trouble. And I think not many people are able to articulate and understand what the power of poor is. And there's a real, real powerful force in play for people who are in poverty, in poor situations, uncertainty of where the next meal's coming from, running out of food, facing that horrible reality of actually running out of food, dealing with the lack of hope that comes from that, waking up and feeling like my circumstances are never going to change, and you just feel miserable. And there is power in this, and it is extremely strong. It is very pervasive. It almost takes over your entire being. And it's really an either or. The power of poor can go one of two ways. And growing up in poverty, I saw it all around me. And most of the time, it went, let's say, to the right or to the left. Most of the time, it went to the right. Most of the time, it went one way. And that one way, you have a decision when you're faced in the middle of being poor. When you're smack dab in the middle of poverty, there's a decision to be made. And most people make the decision to drug. They look at the circumstances, they look at the insurmountable, at least seemingly insurmountable challenges before them. They look at the depressing track record of failure. They look at the fact that they're always behind on their bills, that they never have enough money to do something. They look at all of that stuff and they choose to drug. And you go, well, Brandon, not everybody that I know that's been poor, you know, is strung out on heroin or meth or marijuana or crack or glue or, well, yeah, exactly. There's 1,000 different ways to drug. There's cheap beer. There's cheap vodka. There's mouthwash. And you go, well, yeah, but everybody I know is not addicted to a substance. Yeah, there's also cigarettes. There's entertainment. There's Netflix binge watching. There's getting buried in an endless whatever on your phone. You know, back in the day when I was growing up, poor people would drug through cable TV. If they weren't addicted to some substance, they would drug through soap operas. They would drug through cable TV. Sometimes you would find people drugging through gaming systems, Super Nintendos and Sega Genesises and Nintendo 64s. And they would choose to drug by checking out and entertaining themselves in order to distract from the real problems. And I saw a stat, and I'm actually going to look at this because I want to see average Netflix time per day. And it would help if I turned my internet connection on. Average Netflix time per day. This is the one that I saw from July of last year. I wonder what the most recent one is. From July of last year, the average American is spending... That's unbelievable. The average American is spending 19.6 hours watching traditional TV. So they're spending 2.8 hours a day watching traditional TV. They're spending 10 hours per week on Netflix, which would come out to about 1.4 hours a day. And they're spending 5 hours a day on Amazon and Hulu, which would, what, be another half hour. So that is 1.4, that's 3, 4, that's 5 hours a day between Netflix, average TV, and Hulu and Amazon. Now let's see how much time on Facebook per day. I wonder if Facebook is burying this. I can't find any anything. Here we go, from February of last year. They're spending 24 to 30 minutes per day. Okay, so there's a half hour. How much time on Instagram? Holy smokes, people spend almost an hour per day on Instagram. So we're at 6.5 hours between the streaming services and Instagram and Facebook. We're at 6.5 hours. That's over 25% of your day. If you're sleeping 8 hours a day, which most people in poverty tend to sleep even more if they have chosen to drug, you're at 50% of the day is spent sleeping or entertaining yourself. And that to me is just remarkable. That's remarkable to me. And it's really, really sad. And no motivational person coming along and telling you, oh, just follow my program and you'll have the life of your dreams. If they don't know this incredibly burdensome weight of poverty and the almost irresistible urge, pull to drug, to distract you from the cold, hard realities of your economic situation, it's not going to do anything for you. A Tony Robbins book's not going to do jack squat. A Marie Forleo inspirational video is not going to do anything to combat that, because they are targeting people who are not in a poverty-stricken situation. So you say, well, wow, that's really depressing. What do I do? I'm drugging. You know, I'm sitting around. I'm goofing off on Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook. I'm living out this fantasy through these visual images coming through my head. So I'm living out the life of a celebrity star who, you know, is very wealthy through watching the Kardashians, or I'm living out my fantasies of being a travel person by following a dozen travel bloggers on Instagram, and I'm living out my fantasy of driving fast cars by following all these car people on Instagram. Oh, and that doesn't even include YouTube. Holy cow. So we're already over 50% with those other things. How much time spent on YouTube each day? Forty minutes of mobile watching by the average person. How much time do people spend watching YouTube each day? We spend billions of hours. This is from February 2017, so it's probably even changed. We spend a billion hours a day on YouTube, more than Netflix and Facebook video combined. Okay, well, that's the aggregate, but what does that break down to as far as the actual users? It looks like it's about an hour. Looks like it's about an hour of day watching YouTube. So that puts us into the 55-60% of time spent drugging, which I don't know which comes first. Is this the cart before the horse, chicken before the egg, egg before the chicken sort of debate, where I guess it would be a chicken before the egg debate, not a cart before the horse debate. Is this something because there's so many people in poverty that they're choosing to drug in these ways? Or are people in poverty because they're spending their time in this fashion? Interesting. Interessante, they say. I say. Very interessante. So growing up in poverty, that's the thing I saw, is that most people chose to drug. And you can choose to drug in hundreds of ways. What these other business people won't share is they don't tell you how to stop drugging. They don't even admit that poverty is a problem. They admit that, oh, it's just that you're not confident enough to take that first step. So, you know, that to me is, it just seems like it's missing. It's targeting a very small segment of the population. The Muthonomics, I want to target the 3 billion people that are in poverty. Like, how are we going to help them? Holy cow. How are we going to help the 3 billion people that are in poverty? Not by telling them how to stylize their Instagram picture a little bit better. It's all smoke and mirrors, people. There are real foundational principled things at play which will actually contribute to perhaps changing the circumstances of your life. And it's not going to be some filter on some app. So the thing that you have to decide if you are smack dab in the middle of poverty, the thing you have to decide is, instead of drugging, you have to pick something else. And the word I'm going to use might surprise you a little bit. You might think, oh, we're just going to say do. You just got to do. Just do it. No, it's much stronger. I'm going to choose the word defect. Defect. Not in the terms of a defect, like, oh, that particular appliance has a defect. It's defected. It doesn't work. Defect as in leaving a country. See, the mentality associated and almost expected of those in poverty to assume the victim position, to blame everybody else, to abandon responsibility, to blame your parents, blame your uncle, blame the priest that diddled your whatever, blame, you know, the guy down the road that cheated you, blame. There is a very strong mental camaraderie between people living in poverty. And if you if you don't want to drug, if you want to stop drugging, the only alternative for you to get out of that is to defect. You must mentally defect from that system of thought that blames others, that feels sorry for yourself, that is constantly looking for sympathy, constantly looking to play the victim card, constantly looking for a handout, constantly looking for someone else to solve your problems, whether that's a relative or a lottery ticket or, you know, the slot machines down at the local casino or electing some buffoon politician to solve your problems. You must defect from that faulty mentality. It's killing you. And it's drugging untold millions in America, and I'm guessing throughout the rest of the world. And it's got to stop with you. If you want to change your circumstances, you've got to defect from that faulty system of thinking. And you say, well, what do I defect to? It's so stacked against me. The cards are just, I've been dealt a crummy hand. The odds are against me. The gods are against me. Fate is against me. The universe is against me. What do I defect to? Two words. Write them down. You're probably not going to like them because you probably have never implemented them. Here they are. Individual responsibility. You must pick up the banner of individual responsibility, and you must start taking baby steps towards that new land. You go, but defecting's hard. No freaking really? Try not to curse. I don't want to be the cursing podcaster either, although sometimes it just flows naturally. Really? Defecting's hard, you think? You know, go and turn off your Netflix and maybe read some history. There's a guy, Havel, H-A-V-E-L. Check. Why is my psychotic chihuahua? If anybody wants a chihuahua, you can come and take her off my hands. Maybe the people in Venezuela would bid on her for a meal. Harkening back to last year's episodes when I was blasting price controls in Venezuela and referencing articles on Forbes.com where the people in Venezuela were actually breaking into the zoo to kill animals and eat them because the socialist government had failed so miserably. But individual responsibility, defecting is hard. The guy Havel, he was a Czech Republic citizen who spent time in slave labor camps under the Soviet regime because he disagreed. He had opposing ideas. And you talk about defecting ideologically, it causes difficulty. And it's not easy. It's easy to defect because there are it requires breaking away from the pack. And, you know, there's a reason that people sometimes will make fun of other groups of people for being lemmings. If there's ever an arena where being a lemming is easy, it's in the realm of poverty. Because everybody's mutually suffering, everybody's mutually bitching, everybody's mutually complaining, everybody's trying to one-up each other on the victimhood. And there is this built-in resentment for anybody who decides to try to break away. So if you try to leave, it's, oh, you're better than me? Oh, you're forgetting your roots? Oh, well, now you're a big, you know. Yeah. Yeah, I am trying to remove myself from this terrible situation. And anyone else is welcome to come along with me. All it requires is that you defect to the dogma of individual responsibility. Now, once you do that, there's absolutely no guarantee
that you're going to turn into a Tony Robbins, that you're going to turn into some big famous business person. It might just very well be that you upgrade from a trailer with no electricity, no running water, and, you know, out in the middle of nowhere to a middle-class house in a decent blue-collar neighborhood. I mean, maybe that's all that means. But it's, see, here's the thing. It's not the attainment of the material possession which is paramount. It's the mastering of the internal mentality. That was good, man. I can sling some words. Maybe I'm a raconteur. I don't even know how to pronounce that word. Raconteur? I don't even think I can spell it. Wow, I spelled it so bad it was the third suggestion. A person who tells anecdotes in a skillful and amusing way. Well, yeah. I'm probably pretty low on that totem pole. But it's not the acquisition of the materialistic possessions that's paramount. It's the implementation of a new mental paradigm that is incredibly valuable. My in-laws tell this story of my mother-in-law's a nurse, and she worked at a hospital. This is probably 15 or 20 years ago. And there was a married couple who worked at the hospital, and they were the janitors. They were the bedpan changers. They were the sheet changers. They did the bedding, and they cleaned out urinals, and they scrubbed the toilets and cleaned up puke and all this stuff. And my mother-in-law said that they were the happiest two people that she had ever met. And one day she asked them, she said, "How do you guys do this day in, day out, terrible hours, not very good pay, horrible, horrible responsibilities, I mean disgusting responsibilities?" And she said that they both looked at her and smiled, and they said, "It's not for us, it's for him." And they pointed up, and they had this, apparently this big, strong belief in God, and they were working for him, to honor him, to glorify him. They found joy in working in such, you know, what most people would consider as untenable circumstances, and yet they pointed upwards and thanked God for giving them the work, and they worked with an attitude that puts my attitude to shame, puts most people's attitudes to shame. But they understood that it wasn't the acquisition of the material possession that was the most important thing. It was the implementation of the correct mental paradigm. And the correct mental paradigm is individual responsibility. That's what it boils down to. So if you're in poverty and you're listening to this episode and you've been drugging, you can choose to continue to drug. And you know what? Nobody's even going to know. Nobody's even going to care. Because they've already written you off into being in that foreign land of Povertyville. And they don't care if you defect. They really don't. In fact, it probably benefits them if you don't defect. They can continue to make outlandish promises, to give you benefits so that they can be in power. They can continue to sell you more and more drugs, to drug yourself and distract yourself. They can give you more entertainment, more casinos, more booze, more substances to become addicted to, more things to watch, more apps to play with, more candy crushes to crush. They don't care. They don't care about you. All they care about is monetizing you. And if they can monetize an entire, if they can monetize millions and millions of people who are in poverty by feeding them their required necessary narcotic, they're going to continue to do it, and they don't give a flying flip about you. So if you want to do that, go for it. If on the other hand, you're listening to this and you go, "Wow, this guy's kind of mean. I don't like him. He says mean things. He's a meanie." Well, then maybe, just maybe, me being mean will get you off your keister, will flip a switch in your brain to say, "Hey, I want to defect. I want to go on a journey to this individual responsibility land." And who knows what you'll find there? Well, I'll tell you, you're not going to find ease and comfort. You're going to find difficulty and challenges and exhaustion and frustration and, oh, why did I leave? I just want to go suck my pacifier again. I just want to suck my thumb and have my blankie. Yeah, you're probably going to feel like that at times. But I will tell you what, there is something that is intrinsically satisfying about pursuing the land of individual responsibility. Because the farther you journey into that land, the more rewarding it becomes, because the more it becomes self-perpetuating. You get a tiny bit of confidence, and then that becomes even more confidence, and then that becomes even more confidence, and then you realize, wow, I can help people now. I'm not just a leech. I'm not just a leech that's given up. So, you know, these are things that people won't talk to you about. You know, most of the discussions I hear on poverty and on being poor are from, I'm assuming, well-intentioned academic intellectuals, and they want to pontificate, oh, the effects of poverty are very extreme. If you don't know where your next meal comes from, how are you going to focus on your studies? Well, you know what? All they're doing is just giving these poor people an excuse to go, oh, yeah, I guess I don't have to focus on my studies. Here's how you do it. You just do it. You don't listen to all the rich pontificator academic people who are giving you an out to continue to be part of their focus group. You say, screw you, academic, intellectual man, born with a silver spoon in your mouth, a trust fund kid. Go pound sand. Yeah, I don't know where my next meal's coming from, but you know what? Sure as hell, it's not going to prevent me from studying. It's not going to prevent me from working hard. It's not going to prevent me from continuing my journey into individual responsibility land. That's the attitude that you need to adopt. Which is why I have zero patience for people who are born with a silver spoon in their mouth. Man, if you want to get me riled up, just you know, introduce me to some privileged, spoiled, entitled, you know, some jackass that, you know, his dad was this or that or the other. I mean, ugh, give me a break. Just, it's like steel wool for the soul. Yikes. I can't stand it. So if you're in poverty, I could say you need to. If you're in poverty, you got two choices. You can continue to drug or you can defect. The defection is hard, but it's an option. And if you choose to continue to drug, you know what? I ain't got no sympathy for you. Man, this guy really is mean. But you know what? It's not mean. It's actually the compassionate position. And you go, what? The compassionate position is to continue to give me what the drugs that I demand. I've got a bad lot in life, and I demand all of my comforts. That's not compassionate to continue to give you that. Compassionate is to teach you, to implore you, to get off your keister and start moving towards the land of individual responsibility. So that's what Muthanomics is about. I have a burning desire to implore people, the 3 billion people in the world who are in poverty, who have been dealt a crappy hand, whether through families who have been negligent, countries that have been negligent. And it starts with drawing a circle around your own 2 feet and saying, you know what? I am going to take up the banner of individual responsibility. And I'm going to start taking baby steps towards that end. It's going to be hard. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be a lot of obstacles. There's going to be a lot of resistance. There's going to be disappointments and failures and all kinds of stuff. But you know what? I ultimately believe that that's going to be better than the status quo of just continuing to sit here and drug myself. Because time's going by anyway, people. We all have a clock over our heads. We all have a countdown clock over our heads. Some of us might be at 7 seconds right now. Some of us are at 7 seconds. I don't know if any listeners are at 7 seconds. That would be weird. But some of us are at a day, 24 hours, 365 days, 34 years, 42 years, 17 years, 12 months, 4 months. All of us have a countdown clock over our head. Do you really want to get to where that thing's under 10 going, well, I should have drugged more? No, it's not going to be fulfilling. 9, 8, 7, 6. Well, might as well refresh my Instagram feed one more time. 4, 3, 2. Oh, look. Oh, beep. That's your imaginary EKG that just went flat. Yeah, time's ticking by anyway, people. So stop drugging and spend the time defecting. Defecting to an intellectually, to the mental land of individual responsibility. So that's my January, my first podcast in January for this Muthonomics thing. Probably will be the theme that we will carry on through the year. Along these lines of understanding laissez-faire economics, understanding the powers that are in play, that are available to anybody, regardless of their current standing and lot in life. Because all of us, if you have a functioning brain and an able body, you're able to move in this direction. Even if you have a functioning brain, you're able to move in this direction because it's a battle for the mind. So, be sober-minded, wean yourself off the drugs, maybe even quit cold turkey, and start moving towards being individually responsible. Have a wonderful day, and I look forward to chatting with you guys very shortly. We'll continue this theme, pick it up, and suggest some things to read. The first thing that I would read is I would Google, assuming you have an internet connection, I would Google Thomas Sowell, Thomas Sowell, free market economics. And I would start to acquaint yourself with the concept of laissez-faire, of free market economics, because this is the kernel of power that will contribute to fueling this newfound individual responsibility. Thomas Sowell, free market economics. Go get after it. Talk to you guys later. Have a wonderful day and a happy new year. Bye.